Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. And today we're going to be looking at embeddings.
Okay.
So how can we represent complex data, like ideas, even molecules, just using numbers?
Right.
Sounds a little technical, but I think it's going to be pretty mind-blowing stuff. And we're going to make sure it's clear.
Absolutely.
So imagine trying to capture the essence of something like democracy.
Okay.
But not using words. Just using a unique set of coordinates.
Interesting.
That's embedding.
Yeah, it's like finding this hidden map of information where similar concepts end up clustering together.
Yeah.
Regardless of how they're sort of traditionally categorized.
Exactly. And to help us navigate this latent space of ideas, we have an expert who can explain how embeddings are really shaking up fields like machine learning and AI.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Embeddings are really revolutionizing how we analyze and understand data.
Yeah.
They're not just about representing data points. They're about revealing those hidden connections and structures within that data.
Okay, let's unpack this a little bit. Where do we actually see these embeddings in action?
Give us a real-world example. So one common example is what's called token embeddings.
Okay.
And you can think about words in a sentence.
Right.
Each word gets its own unique numerical vector, its embedding.
Got it.
Based on its meaning and how it's used.
So in the source material, it mentions something really wild. Facebook researchers used embeddings to do unsupervised language translation.
Right.
That's insane.
It is pretty remarkable.
Aligning the latent spaces of different languages
to
translate without directly teaching the system the languages themselves.
That's right.
It's like a Rosetta Stone.
It is. It's like finding a Rosetta Stone for data.
For data.
Yeah. By mapping words from different languages into a shared latent space, you can uncover these relationships and translate meanings in ways that traditional methods can't.
So it's more than just matching vocabulary.
Right.
It's about finding that deeper conceptual alignment.
Exactly. And the implications go far beyond language translation. Think about applying this to fields like sentiment analysis.
Okay.
Where you're trying to understand the emotional tone behind text.
Yeah.
Embeddings can help us see beyond the literal words and grasp the underlying sentiment.
So can we take this idea of embeddings beyond words? Can we embed entire ideas, concepts, or even, as you mentioned earlier, molecules?
Absolutely. Anything we can describe mathematically can potentially be embedded in this latent space.
Okay.
Take DeepMind's AlphaFold, for instance.
Yeah.
It uses embeddings on contact graphs to predict the intricate 3D structures of proteins.
Wow.
This has had a seismic impact on fields like drug discovery and disease research.
Graphs seem to be a recurring theme here.
Yeah.
Is there something about graphs that makes them particularly well-suited for embedding techniques?
Graphs are powerful because they represent relationships between things.
Okay.
Not just individual data points.
Got it.
Think of a social network.
Okay.
The people are the nodes and their connections are the edges. We can use that structure to learn embeddings that capture the nuances of social dynamics and make predictions about how information spreads.
And it's not just theoretical, right? Uber Eats, for example, uses graph neural networks to power its food recommendation system.
Exactly.
They're tapping into the power of graph embeddings to personalize our dining experiences.
Yeah. GNNs are specifically designed to work with graph data, and they're becoming increasingly important in a wide range of applications, from social network analysis to understanding complex systems like financial markets or even the human brain.
So these graphs help us see relationships and similarities, but how do we actually measure closeness in this latent space? It can't just be about physical distance, right?
It's a great question, and it highlights the importance of choosing the right metric for your problem.
Right.
While Euclidean distance, the kind we use on a map, can be useful,
right,
it's often not the best way to measure conceptual or semantic similarity.
What other options do we have? We touched on cosine similarity earlier, which looks at the angle between vectors. Mm. Are there other metrics we should be aware of?
There are many. Another interesting one is what's called the Jaccard index.
Huh?
It's great for comparing sets and is often used in fields like text mining and social network analysis. The Jaccard index looks at the overlap between two sets. For example, it could compare the words used in two different documents to gauge their similarity.
So it's like a measure of shared vocabulary or common ground.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It seems like the choice of metric can really impact how we interpret and analyze the relationships within this latent space.
Absolutely. And sometimes we need to move beyond traditional metrics altogether.
Okay.
That's where things get really interesting. We'll delve into that in the next part of our deep dive.
Ooh, I'm intrigued. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's pause here for a quick recap. Mm. We've explored the concept of embeddings representing data as numerical vectors in a latent space. We saw how these embeddings can be used to do amazing things, from unsupervised language translation to predicting protein structures. And we've started to touch on the crucial role of graphs and the importance of choosing the right metric to measure similarity in this latent space.
We've only just begun to scratch the surface. In the next part, we'll dive deeper into alternative geometries and explore the fascinating world of hyperbolic space, which offers a whole new way of looking at relationships and hierarchies.
I'm ready to have my mind bent. We'll be back soon with part two of this deep dive into the fascinating world of embeddings.
Welcome back to our exploration of embeddings.
I'm still reeling from that last part we've established, that embeddings can be used to represent anything from words to complex molecules.
Right.
And graphs are a powerful way to capture the relationships between these data points.
Absolutely.
But you hinted that we might need to go beyond traditional ways of measuring distance or similarity in this latent space.
Right. Think about it. We often try to cram complex relationships into a flat Euclidean space, the kind we're used to navigating in our everyday lives.
Right.
But what if the underlying structure of the data is more like a tree branching out in all directions?
Okay.
Or a complex network with interconnected hubs and clusters?
That's where hyperbolic space comes in, right?
Exactly.
You mentioned it briefly in the last part.
I did.
It's like a universe where the rules of geometry are different and distances can grow exponentially the further you travel.
Exactly. Hyperbolic space might sound mind-bending.
Yeah.
But it's actually a much more natural fit for representing certain types of data, especially those with hierarchical structures.
In our source material, it mentions that to accurately represent certain graph structures in Euclidean space, you'd need a space with more dimensions than atoms in the universe.
Yeah. It's a lot.
That's just mind-boggling.
It really highlights the limitations of forcing everything into that flat Euclidean framework.
Right.
Hyperbolic space allows us to represent these complex hierarchical relationships in a more compact and efficient way.
Right.
Without resorting to an absurd number of dimensions.
Okay. I'm starting to see the appeal, but how do hyperbolic embeddings actually work in practice?
It sounds incredibly complex. It's all about finding the right mathematical model to represent the relationships between data points in this curved hyperbolic space.
Okay.
Imagine mapping a family tree onto the surface of a sphere.
Okay.
As you move down the generations, the branches spread out,
right,
capturing the exponential growth of the family.
So instead of points on a flat map, we're thinking of points on a curved surface where distances behave differently.
Precisely. And this seemingly abstract concept has very real implications for things like knowledge representation and natural language processing.
Uh-huh.
Think about the vast network of information on Wikipedia, for example.
Okay.
It's not a flat list of facts. It's a complex web of interconnected concepts and hierarchies.
So hyperbolic embeddings could help us navigate that vast knowledge graph more effectively.
Exactly. They allow us to capture the nuances of semantic relationships and make connections that would be difficult or impossible to see in a traditional Euclidean space.
It sounds like we're on the verge of unlocking a whole new level of understanding when it comes to complex systems and networks.
And we're only just beginning to explore the potential of hyperbolic embeddings and geometric deep learning in general.
Yeah.
There are still many challenges to overcome.
Sure.
But the possibilities are truly exciting.
You mentioned that geometric deep learning is changing the game in AI and machine learning. Can you elaborate on that?
So traditional machine learning methods often struggle with data that has complex non-Euclidean structures.
Okay.
Think about images, for instance.
Okay.
They're not just grids of pixels. They have spatial relationships and hierarchies of features.
So geometric deep learning is about developing algorithms that can work with this kind of data more naturally.
Exactly. By incorporating geometric principles into deep learning models, we can build more powerful and robust systems that can handle the complexities of real-world data.
This is pretty mind-blowing stuff, but I know that some of our listeners might be wondering about the practical implications of all this.
Yeah.
What are some of the concrete ways that hyperbolic embeddings in geometric deep learning are being used to solve real-world problems?
So the applications are vast and rapidly expanding. In drug discovery, researchers are using hyperbolic embeddings to model the relationships between molecules and predict their properties, which can accelerate the development of new drugs and therapies.
That's incredible. So it's not just theoretical. It's already having a tangible impact on fields like healthcare and medicine. What other examples come to mind?
In social network analysis, hyperbolic embeddings are being used to understand the dynamics of online communities, identify influential users, and even predict the spread of misinformation.
Wow.
This has important implications for everything from marketing and advertising to understanding social and political movements.
It seems like anywhere there's a complex network of relationships, hyperbolic embeddings have the potential to unlock new insights and make more accurate predictions.
Precisely. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. As the field of geometric deep learning continues to evolve, we can expect to see even more innovative applications emerge in areas like robotics, computer vision, and natural language understanding.
This deep dive has definitely opened my eyes to a whole new world of possibilities. But before we get too carried away, let's take a moment to ground ourselves. We've talked a lot about geometry and spaces, but there's another area of mathematics that seems to be playing an increasingly important role in understanding how learning happens on graphs, category theory. Can you shed some light on this?
Category theory might seem like a very abstract field, but it's actually a powerful language for describing relationships and structures.
Okay.
Which makes it surprisingly relevant to the world of graph neural networks and deep learning.
I have to admit, category theory is a bit outside my comfort zone. Can you break it down for us in a way that even someone who's not a mathematician can grasp?
Think of category theory as a way of looking for patterns and connections at a very high level of abstraction.
Okay.
It's not about the specific details of the objects themselves,
right,
but about the relationships between them.
So instead of focusing on the individual nodes in a graph, we're looking at the overall structure of the network and how those nodes interact.
Exactly. And this perspective turns out to be incredibly valuable when we're trying to understand how learning happens on graphs.
Hmm.
Category theory provides a framework for thinking about how information flows through these networks and how those flows can be optimized.
Okay. I'm starting to see how this seemingly abstract mathematical framework can have very concrete implications for designing more efficient and powerful GNNs.
It's still early days, but category theory is emerging as a powerful tool for understanding the fundamental principles of learning on graphs. It helps us to see the forest for the trees, so to speak,
right,
and to develop more general and adaptable learning algorithms.
This deep dive has been a whirlwind of information. We've gone from embedding words to molecules, explored the mind-bending world of hyperbolic space, and now we're delving into the abstract realm of category theory. It's incredible to see how these seemingly disparate fields are converging to unlock new insights and possibilities, but I think our listeners are ready for a bit of a breather. We'll pick at this thread in the next part of our deep dive and explore how these concepts are shaping the future of AI and our understanding of the universe of information.
I'm looking forward to it.
Until then, keep those mental gears turning, and we'll see you back here for part three. Welcome back, deep divers. We've journeyed from the very basics of embeddings to the mind-bending world of hyperbolic space, and we've even touched on the abstract power of category theory.
It's been quite a ride.
It has. In this final part, let's explore how all of these concepts are shaping the future of AI and our understanding of information itself.
It's like we've been assembling this toolkit for navigating the universe of data.
Right.
A universe that's far more complex and interconnected than we ever imagined.
We've talked about how embeddings can capture the essence of anything from a single word to a complex molecule, and how graphs help us visualize those relationships between these data points. But where do we go from here? What are the frontiers of this field?
One of the most exciting frontiers is the development of more dynamic and adaptive embedding models. Imagine embeddings that evolve over time, capturing how concepts change and relationships shift.
It's like watching the map of our latent space redraw itself as we learn more about the world. That's incredible.
Mm.
What are some of the challenges in creating these dynamic embeddings?
One of the key challenges is dealing with the sheer volume and velocity of data. The world is constantly generating new information, and our models need to be able to adapt and update their representations in real time.
So it's not just about finding the right coordinates in our latent space. It's about making sure those coordinates stay relevant as the landscape of information changes around us.
Exactly. And this requires developing new algorithms and architectures that can handle streaming data, identify anomalies, and update embeddings on the fly.
This brings us back to the potential of category theory, which you described as a powerful language for understanding how learning happens on graphs.
Mm-hmm.
Could category theory help us build these more dynamic and adaptive embedding models?
So category theory offers a framework for thinking about how information flows through networks and how those flows can be optimized. By applying these principles to embedding models, we might be able to create systems that are more robust, adaptable, and capable of handling the complexities of real-world data.
It sounds like we're moving beyond simply representing data to actually modeling the process of learning itself. That's a profound shift in perspective.
And it has implications that go far beyond just improving the accuracy of our algorithms. It raises fundamental questions about the nature of intelligence knowledge and how we make sense of the world around us.
It's almost philosophical in a way.
Right.
By trying to build machines that can learn, we're forced to confront some of the deepest mysteries of our own minds.
Absolutely. And the insights we gain from this endeavor will have far-reaching consequences, not just for the field of AI, but for our understanding of human cognition, creativity, and the very fabric of reality itself.
Now, I know our listeners are probably eager to hear about some of the more tangible applications of all this. What are some of the ways that these advanced embedding techniques are being used to solve real-world problems?
One area where we're seeing incredible progress is in personalized medicine. By combining patient data, genetic information, and knowledge from scientific literature, researchers are developing embedding models that can predict individual responses to treatments and help tailor therapies to each patient's unique needs.
So it's like creating a personalized map of each patient's health landscape, guiding doctors toward the most effective treatments.
Precisely. And this approach has the potential to revolutionize healthcare, leading to more targeted therapies, better outcomes, and a deeper understanding of the complex interplay of factors that influence our health.
What other examples come to mind?
In materials, science researchers are using embedding models to discover new materials with desired properties. By representing the structure and composition of materials as data points in a latent space, they can explore vast chemical spaces and identify promising candidates for everything from more efficient solar cells to stronger and lighter building materials.
It's like having a digital alchemist guiding us toward the creation of materials that were once only the stuff of science fiction.
And these are just a few examples. The potential applications of these techniques are truly vast and are limited only by our imagination and our ability to ask the right questions.
This deep dive has been an incredible journey. We've gone from the fundamental concepts of embeddings to the cutting edge of AI research and explored how these ideas are transforming our understanding of data knowledge in the world around us. But before we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with a final thought. We started by talking about how embeddings can capture the essence of ideas. But perhaps the most profound idea of all is that we're only just beginning to understand the true power of embeddings and the vast uncharted territory of the latent space.
It's a universe waiting to be explored, full of mysteries to uncover and insights to be gained. And who knows what incredible discoveries await us on this journey.
This has been The Deep Dive, and we hope you've enjoyed exploring the latent space of ideas with us. Until next time, keep those minds curious and those imaginations fired up.